You know what's the scariest part of October? Being vulnerable to cyber criminals. That's why this Cyber Scaries Month, you need Webroot Total Protection. With all-in-one protection for your devices, privacy, and identity, Webroot Total Protection helps defend every part of your digital life. Change your October from cyber scary to cyber secure with 60% off Webroot Total Protection at www.webroot.com/audio. That's 60% off for a limited time, but only when you go to www.webroot.com/audio.
Hello. The role of nitrogen in farming is huge, but a recent report from the Centre of Innovation and Excellence in Livestock really digs into just how important it is for protein production and highlights where nitrogen losses occur. In today's podcast, Mole Valley Farmers Head of Grassland and Forage Agronomy, Lisa Hamley, speaks with Dr. Mark Young and Katerina Karpasatu from CL to learn more. This podcast will guide you from the soil up on how nitrogen can be used most efficiently on land and in animal diets. I'm Seth Conway, so let's get into this conversation, but only after I've made an appeal to you to hit subscribe on the Mole Valley Farmers podcast wherever you're listening to us today. Thanks for doing so. So here we are, nitrogen in farming. It's informative. So another interesting conversation lies ahead for us today on the Mole Valley Farmers podcast. Delighted to have Lisa, Mark and Katerina in our virtual room that we've created. Hi, everyone. Mark and Katerina, if you just introduce yourselves for us, please.
Thanks, Seth. My name's Mark Young. I'm an innovation specialist with one of the three agritech centres called CL, and our specialty is livestock. And I'm looking forward to talking to your people today.
Great to have you along, Mark. And Katerina.
Hi, Seth. Lovely to be here. My name is Katerina Karpasitu, and I work with Mark at the Centre for Innovation Excellence in Livestock. And I'm a sustainability specialist working with the rest of the team, the innovation team.
Fantastic. Two eminent experts today we're going to be speaking to, along with another expert, Lisa Hamley, a familiar voice on the Mole Valley Farmers podcast. Morning, Lisa.
Morning, Seth. Yeah, I'm really excited actually to be here with Katerina and Mark from CL. I recently attended a meeting where they discussed this report. I thought, oh, this is so exciting that our members and shareholders really need to know about it. So, yeah.
So perhaps, Lisa, you'd be a good one to just let us know what this conversation is going to be roughly about today.
Well, the meeting was about nitrogen use, particularly within the livestock sector. And CL have done a report regarding, you know, how we can improve our nitrogen use. So hopefully this will explain a little bit more of what's in the report and make it in a digestible format for our farm and shareholders. So I asked them, why did you do this? So perhaps, I don't know, Katerina, tell us why you did this report.
So the report mainly explores the nitrogen cycle and its various processes, and it helps us understand where the various losses of nitrogen occur within the cycle in order to prompt conversations about improving nitrogen use efficiencies and reducing nitrogen losses, therefore mitigating the various adverse impacts to the triple bottom line. But Mark was there from the very beginning, from the inception of the whole concept, so I think Mark can add to this.
Yes, thank you, Katerina. The important point about finding out where the inefficiencies are is critical to help farmers. But we also wanted to add to that the idea that nitrogen is absolutely critical for farming, particularly for promoting plant production, but also it's an a key element for protein production. And so it's in the context of those things that there are some losses, and we want to think about it in terms of that as a natural cycle. We're producing protein, we're promoting plant growth to do that, and that's both bringing nitrogen into the system and there's some losses, and we want to look at that in its get a balanced view of things.
Lisa, did you mean to do a pun just a minute ago? So you're going to digest this?
No, but yes, I did, Seth. Yes, obviously.
Yes, I'm glad to hear it. Classic Lisa Hamley, brilliant. And from Mole Valley's perspective, Lisa, you say it's obviously an interesting conversation to bring to our members, farmer shareholders. nitrogen on farm is so important, isn't it? But it really has to be balanced, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it is absolutely essential, you know, and I think the challenges, which, you know, we're going to go into a little bit more detail, but with livestock farmers, obviously, protein's vital for their diet, which I'm sure Mark's going to go into more. But from a management point of view, from an agronomy point of view, which is obviously which I'm coming from, you know, we've got the, you know, muck and slurry that comes to the other end. So we've got to manage that and how that goes back out on the land, plus balancing the crop requirements. So ensuring that the crop's got enough nitrogen to reach its genetic potential. So it is exactly like Katerina says, it's a cycle, and we need to make sure that we're being as efficient as possible. So hence my interest.
Excellent. So Mark, am I right in thinking that most animals really can't make protein themselves? They need it in their diet. So where does nitrogen come into that?
It's a good point. There's a sort of subtlety to what you've just said that perhaps needs explaining. That proteins, which animals make and plants make as well, is made up of a chain of these things called amino acids. And there's about 20 that make up the proteins we know that come out of agriculture. And those 20, 10 of them are essential to have in an animal's diet because animals can't make them. They can make the others, but you can't make a complete protein with the missing ones that you have to have in your diet. And so it's imperative that there's protein in the diet of animals for them to make their own protein. And ideally, the balance of the different amino acids matches what they need. So there are plants can make all of the amino acids, and microbes can as well, but animals can't. That's the higher animals. It's a special case of ruminants, which I may go into a bit later, but the essential idea here is that you need protein in your diet, and it will be supplying some of the building blocks for your own protein that you can't make yourself.
Now, that's really interesting. Actually, let's talk about the ruminants now, because obviously lots of farmers that will be listening to this, particularly dairy farmers, livestock farmers, they obviously know about the rumen, but just tell us a little bit about where the things that you've been looking into play into this.
Sure. So the non-ruminant animals, and the main ones we farm are poultry and pigs, they have a requirement, just like humans, to have the essential amino acids to come in through their diet. The ruminants, however, the microbes living in their stomach can actually make those essential amino acids, which then pass further down the digestive tract beyond the rumen to the stomach and the intestine. And so the ruminant animal is normally digesting more microbe protein than protein that came in that it ate itself. And so the microbes there can make protein out of, they can change from non-essential amino acids into essential amino acids, but they can also use just nitrogen that's available to them and make an amino acid. And so therefore the microbes can actually be adding protein to the diet. And the say it's a dairy cow, she may be getting more protein than is actually in the food she's eating, get presented at her level of her stomach and her small intestine. So the ruminants are unique in that they can actually eat very low quality feeds because the microbes add protein.
I mean, Lisa, you know, we're getting into some really detailed science on this, aren't we? Mm. You know, for you, when you're out speaking to farmers, how much do you sort of discuss the nitrogen that goes into animals directly and also into the plants that are growing?
So I suppose what I'm starting from is from the soil. So we're looking at how much nitrogen is already in the soil, how much might be available. So if you're looking at a grass and clover lay, then some of the proteins will be supplied by the clovers and some by the grass. Grass has got a requirement for nitrogen. So in that scenario, there's a nice balance between the clover being fed, feeding the grass. But if you've not got clover at all, then you're looking to feed the grass, and that you're going to require some nitrogen, in which case. So that very often comes from partly from slurry or from the muck that's going on there, and then partly from a bag, so purchased nitrogen. So it's really massively looking at the soil and that crop's diet, if you like, and the nutrient plan in very much the same way as the animal is being fed. So it's really trying to balance that. And as these, you know, as this report says, it's about efficiency. So, you know, trying to take some of the guesswork out of it, I suppose. I don't know what Katerina and Mark think about that.
The one point I'd make is, and I'm glad you brought up the importance of clover there, is the clover bring nitrogen into the system through microbes living in their root nodules or rhizobium. So the microbes are quite important here. And I completely agree with your point about the importance of the soil in all this.
And that, so clover's a bit like a cow then, Mark?
A bit like a...
a cow. So it can use the nitrogen, yeah, microbes. It's all about the microbes.
Absolutely. And just as an illustration about the ruminant being able to make protein from non-organic nitrogen, you can treat straw with nitrogen and put that into the stomach, and provided the pH and other things are right, that can actually cause the microbes to be adding protein to a straw diet.
I was just going to follow on from the biological fixation of nitrogen to say that there's another two ways of fixing nitrogen to the ground, to the soil, and that's the atmospheric fixation through lightning, and then there's the industrial processes through fertilizers and manures. And why is this nitrogen fixation important? Because although nitrogen is so abundant in our environment, in our atmosphere, it makes about, I think it's almost 78% of the air in the atmosphere, but it's in a form that plants cannot use. So we need to convert this nitrogen gas into forms, into chemical compounds that plants can take up and use for their growth. And that's where fertilizers and manures come in, because soils don't have enough nitrogen for crops to grow quickly enough to feed the whole population.
And I think that's part of it, isn't it, Katerina? There is a certain amount, and yes, we can provide a lot with clover, but sometimes when you've got high requirements for production, so you've got grasses that can, you know, have very high yields, you want to maximise on that yield. So that's when that balance comes in with purchased fertilisers, or making sure that you're using, you know, your slurries to the maximum of their potential as well. But, you know, there is a balance where the clover can feed the crop, which can then feed the animal, but sometimes we're going to need to address that gap.
You know, the importance of soil testing is key, isn't it? Because you need to know what you're dealing with from the beginning here.
Yeah, absolutely, Seth. And if you don't know what you've got, how do you know how much you've got to add to it? You know, and soil, and I would say slurry and muck testing. Every single slurry and muck that comes back is different, because every cow's diet is different. So in which case, you know, the result is wildly different. So if you don't know what you've got, how can you manage it?
The one thing I'd add to that is, it's not just simply soil, isn't just a bag of chemicals. There's also some other important attributes like structure and the form of the nitrogen. And that's where an assessment of soil quality, soil health, will look at things like structure, pore size, and some other things. And it's the microbes and the plants that grow in them that create some of this structure. And so a healthy soil can be the same as a not so healthy soil chemically, because it's got good structure, water holding capacity, and things like that. And that's where we think the use of manures offers an advantage over some of the artificial fertilisers, because they can actually be adding some organic structure to the soils with their interaction they have with the microbes there.
Definitely. It's all about that, making sure that biology can work well. And it's the same in the rumen, isn't it? You know, making sure that that's working efficiently.
Yeah, the interesting thing about efficiency is the level at which you apply that. So it might be most efficient to grow a crop or to get a cow producing at a certain level, but we also have to be thinking about the efficiency across systems. And then that brings in the idea of complementarity. And so the most efficient crop production and the most efficient dairy cow production, that we may want something that's slightly below those maximum efficiencies, but together they're more efficient than the sum of their efficiencies on their own. So, for instance, that's a case of where the dairy system and what the animals are eating may not have as much protein as they might absolutely require for very high production, yet at the same time they may be producing manure that's much better for putting on cropland, that sort of thing. So we have to start thinking about the complementarity of agricultural systems as well.
Moore Valley Farmers is owned by farmers and proud to trade with a cooperative ethos. Our shareholders are at the heart of everything we do, and we work with them to improve productivity, profitability, and sustainability. Being a farmer shareholder brings many great benefits. You automatically earn loyalty points on essential farm inputs, including compound feeds, blends, minerals, fertilizer, and new for 2023, selected total crop performance products and milk replacers. The loyalty points bonus scheme earned farmer shareholders nearly £300,000 in the last year, on top of over £740,000 secured by farmer shareholders through our retail discounts. You'll also get other exclusive farmer shareholder offers through the year, the Moore Valley Farmers newsletter posted to your door each month, and, as a shareholder, you get voting rights at the annual AGM and have a say in your business. We have a farmer shareholder first approach at Moore Valley Farmers, and we believe by working together, we are stronger together. For more information and to join us as a farmer shareholder, visit moleonline.com/farmer-shareholder. Moore Valley Farmers, committed to UK agriculture.
And for you, Katerina, I guess the sustainability angle of nitrogen is highly important, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And first of all, it's important. Nitrogen is important for healthy ecosystems and healthy agricultural systems. And at the same time, we need to be careful about how we use nitrogen and nitrogen management so that we don't harm our ecosystems. And that's where nitrogen losses come into the conversation. So nitrogen losses from the cycle to the environment are inevitable. They are part of the cycle and its processes. For example, nitrogen returns to the air when nitrates are converted back into atmospheric nitrogen through bacteria during the process of denitrification. So natural processes lead to these losses, but the issue comes when we are overusing or misusing fertilizers, and that's this loss then can cause a lot of environmental degradation like eutrophication and toxicity, soil acidity, and a whole range of other problems to our water and to our biodiversity.
The big ones that raise their head often are talking about ammonia losses, which is often to do with manure management. And then there's this one that you don't see called nitrous oxide. And that's often a function of either over, once fertilizers put on or manures are put on soils, you get this nitrous oxide given off. And that's what's the global warming potential of that compared to carbon dioxide and methane, Katerina? I've forgotten the numbers.
Yes, so nitrous oxide is one of the main greenhouse gases, and that's emitted during fertilizer production and use. And nitrous oxide is the most potent of the three common greenhouse gases. It's 300 times more potent than carbon dioxide. And methane, which has all these, it's a very popular, which is more potent than carbon dioxide, is 30 times more potent than carbon dioxide. And then you have nitrous oxide, which is 10 times more potent than methane.
And then the one that we often hear about is nitrate leaching into the waterways, where it's come from soils. Maybe there's been too much fertilizer, or there's some natural manure put on, and then there's a heavy rain, and that promotes aquatic plant growth, which takes oxygen out of the water, which has a detrimental effect and can even kill aquatic wildlife.
Yes, and in fact, these algae that grow during eutrophication because of excess nitrogen in the water, there's algae that can actually produce harmful toxins, and they're called harmful algal blooms, and they pose additional threats to both aquatic ecosystems and to human health when these waters go into our drinking water.
So from sort of a practical point of view, because I'm always thinking about how we can help our farmers and our shareholders, how you know, what's the steps that we should be taking, you know, following on from your report, what's the steps, you know, that we can do from a practical level to help our guys, you know, make sure we're very efficient on nitrogen?
It's a very good question. The report itself wasn't trying to define the possible solutions, but the thought would be that you need to be following the program you said before of doing soil tests, working out what the available nitrogen is, what the crop's going to need, and applying the right amount of crop of fertilizer or manure in the right form for it to be picked up by the crop when it needs it. When it comes to storage of manures, it's about trying to store them in a form, or perhaps adding additives to reduce the amount of nitrogenous emissions. And by nitrogen emissions, I basically mean ammonia and nitrous oxide. And then when it comes to feeding animals, it's about getting the protein right in their diets. And a classic example is if we feed a lot of protein which hasn't got the right balance to, say, poultry or pigs, they will actually excrete, they'll break down and excrete the amino acids they can't use, producing urea in the pigs and uric acid in poultry, because birds produce a slightly different form of nitrogen. And so they'll actually be putting more nitrogen out into the environment. Their manures will be more nitrogen rich and therefore have the potential to have more nitrogen emissions. So getting protein right is important. Now, to be fair, the nutrition industry have got a vested interest in doing that as well, because protein costs money. And so they know that if you're feeding a particular protein which doesn't have the right amino acid balance for the animals you're feeding it to, they add amino acid supplements. So they're already helping you in that regard. When it comes to animals, you want to be feeding them enough protein for them to produce at the level you require. Don't feed them excess protein. And we've been involved in discussions with some nutrition companies lately, and they're saying that in the greater European Union, we've seen some slight reductions in the amount of protein being fed to animals because the nutritionists are getting better and better at putting that right balance of amino acids in.
So what I'm sort of getting from this is, you know, look at the nutrient plan, nutrition for the soil, so nutrient management plan, also visual health inspection of soils, making sure you're not getting any compaction, so you're not travelling when you shouldn't be, etc. Making sure the soils are covered, so we stop that biology working when it doesn't need to be. So cover crops, or just ensuring that, you know, no bare soils are left. And then, from my point of view, I'm handing it over to the nutritionists, because those are the guys that can work their magic, you know, when it comes to feeding the animals. Is that right?
Well, I think so. An agronomist is a plant nutritionist, aren't they, in some
definitely.
Regards?
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
And our report was about nitrogen for livestock. So if we want to bring it back to the issue we brought up before about food production, food security is important for any country, and Britain imports a lot of food. So what we want to do is make best use of the land we've got to minimise the need for that. Nitrogen's important because, unlike carbohydrates and the fats, oils and lipids technically, but let's call them fats, they don't have any significant amounts of nitrogen in. Most of the nitrogen in the animal's body is ending up in the protein. And so if you don't have enough nitrogen, you can't produce protein, be you a ruminant or a non-ruminant. And so it's important there that that's the thing that we as humans have to have in our diet, protein. So nitrogen is a strong theme there. when it comes to food security, livestock are producing a very high quality protein. Plant proteins are lower quality, and you have to supplement them with amino acids. So in terms of human nutrition, animal products specifically have a very high nutritive value. And we mustn't forget that. When people say, oh, I can get this much protein from other crops or other food products, yeah, that's fine, but it's not as high a quality in its natural form as the animal proteins, be that eggs, milk, or meat. So food security is an important thing, and when it comes to the sustainability, food, having high-quality nutrition is an important part of that.
I mean, there's lots of things here to consider, aren't there? But interesting for farmers, Lisa, to hear, you know, they'll obviously know a lot about nitrogen, but to hear what's come out of this report is really useful, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really important, you know, that we, like today, together with companies like CL to have these conversations, because there's a lot of information that gets put to livestock farmers from all directions. But what I do know is we're all on the same page, and we're all trying to produce good food, as Mark's saying, food security, and look after the landscape. And this kind of, to me, brings it all together in a format which is understandable and, helpful.
Mark or Katerina, if our farmers, member shareholders want to know a little bit more about this than we've gone into, where should they be looking for this kind of information?
You can find this report and some other reports we've got about net zero carbon in livestock on our website. And our website is cielivestock.co.uk. And there'll be, under the news section, there'll be a link to this and other reports. We've actually got a complimentary report coming out in a few weeks' time about the importance of protein quality, and I alluded to that in my last comment. So we think that's complementary because, yes, there's nitrogen and there's protein, but not all proteins are created equal. So that second report's going to deliver that last issue and emphasise why livestock proteins are of high value in our diets.
We also have a two-page fact sheet. It's a summary of the key findings of the report that is available on our website, like Mark mentioned earlier. So that's a quick overview of the report with some nice graphics that are available to the public.
Mark, this might be slightly off topic today, but an interesting conversation anyway. With the rise of people going to a non-dairy diet or a non-meat diet, how important is it for the sector to be able to show the benefit of the proteins that are being created through dairy, through meat?
It's very important, and we're actually pairing with the British Society of Animal Science to have a meeting about this and the value of animal products in human diets, and that's going to be held in London in December. So it's specifically about why they're important in their diet. You can live on a diet without any livestock or animal products in it, but you have to be very careful about making sure you get the right sort of nutrients. It's not just protein. Red meat, milk and eggs also come combined with other nutrients, and one of the most telling things about them is they're all highly digestible, so it's readily available.
And just to add to that, Mark, I would say if someone is on a plant-based diet, but it's also important for animal-based diets, one of the things to consider is ultra-processed foods. So whether it's plant-based or animal-based, that's important to eliminate.
I'm so on your page, Katerina. Honestly, it's unbelievable once you start looking into it. That's a whole nother podcast, Seth.
It is.
Yes, but, you know, healthy foods, you know, and healthy soil creates, and I say this, and I luckily enough, I went to a congress where we were actually talking about this whole process. Healthy soil, healthy animals, healthy humans. you know, that's what we're aiming for, and each bit is connected. So like you said, you know, the soil's biology is very much like a rumen. The cow's rumen has to be healthy, then a healthy cow, and then, you know, and then we have healthy humans, and we need to be, yeah, I'm totally on your page there.
Yeah, and it's all about balance, right? Like balance. You mentioned, Lisa, in the beginning.
Yeah. That, oh, me and you are going to have a tell catch Mark up afterwards,
It's all about balance, what do you put in and what you take out.
The interesting thing, just to come back to the ruminant animal there, is their gut system is designed for eating forage, or what some people call roughage. So, yes, we can talk about their ability to produce protein from non-protein sources and things, but they exist on having fibres, the predominantly sort of the largest part of the diet. Non-ruminants don't need that, but we're not advocating eating just animal products. In human diets, where we're an omnivore, we need to be eating some plant-based stuff with fibre, which Katerina has mentioned, that ultra-processed foods quite often are low in fibre. And so it's important to have a bit of everything, as it were, even though we know humans are able to live on just an animal product diet, as shown by the Inuit people in the Arctic, where they don't have any plants whatsoever to speak of. But in this modern day and age, it's about making best use of our resources. And so we want to make sure agricultural land and our use of inputs is done as efficiently as possible. There are some natural leakages in that nitrogen cycle that Katerina talked about, but we shouldn't be pushing some inputs in to get high production and causing much greater leakage than needs to be there. So I think in terms of optimising the system from a sustainability point of view, there's agricultural production and the complementary of different systems, like integrating livestock into a cropping rotation, that sort of thing. It's about the environmental impact, obviously, minimising those losses where they have harmful effects. It's about food security. And when it comes to farming livestock, it's also about farming in a way where we continue to get the sort of social alliance and the social licence, and the public say, yes, that's a good way of farming. So there's quite a big balancing act here. You talked about balancing from the nitrogen point of view, Katerina. Nitrogen use efficiency in its crudest form can sometimes not tell you everything. So if I look at the amount of protein in milk and the amount of protein that cows are eating, that may not tell me what the actual nitrogen use efficiency is, mayn't it? Yeah. And that's because the animals can be gaining or losing weight. So you might look like you're getting more milk and being highly efficient early in lactation, but the cow's actually losing body weight. So conversely, in late lactation, the efficiency will drop, apparently, because you're feeding them and that you're getting an amount out of milk, but they're also gaining body weight. So it's nitrogen use efficiency is a great concept. It's actually sometimes hard to actually measure in a detailed way on farm.
Yeah, in fact, we talk about the need to be increasing nitrogen use efficiency, but it would be better to be talking about optimizing nitrogen use efficiency, because sometimes when you have very high nitrogen use efficiencies, it might be an indication of depleting the resource pool, for example, the soil nitrogen pool.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. You're quite right. The soil that we talked about before, Lisa, being so important. Yes, we're putting a bit of nitrogen on, we're getting lots of crop, but if the soil's getting progressively less nutrients in it, that's not sustainable.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, and we are doing more and more tests and wider ranges of tests to benchmark, because if you don't know what you've got, but it starts off, you know, as the legal requirement of once every 5 years. And then once people start getting into understanding soil, they want more and more different tests. And it's amazing. And to see the interest and enthusiasm of how we can improve soils to get more from what we've already got is, it's an exciting time for us. And I think this is why this report's come at exactly the right moment to, just get us up to that next level of understanding.
If we bring nitrogen's big brother into the argument, which is carbon, there's good reasons to be looking at soil there too. because carbon stored in soil, it's part of that organic matrix which gives you your soil pores and your organic structure. So I think measuring soils for key nutrients and other aspects of that tell you about soil health and soil quality is a really critical thing for whether you're a livestock farmer or a cropping farmer. I've got another point to make. When it comes to using manures, I'm not sure that they're going to be the magic formula that replaces fertilisers at all. We think that what manures do is make best use of nutrients coming out of animal systems, but to actually get the crop yields that we would like, there's always going to be a place for some artificial fertilisers, and maybe the balance of nutrients in those just needs to take account of what the manure is that you're putting on. As you said earlier, Lisa, they're not always the same, the inputs.
No, they're definitely not always the same. And, you know, and the crops are all different. And that's the challenge that we find is really getting into the detail of that nutrient management plan. And, cows are very well effectively have a nutritionist generally, dairy cows in particular, and they will work on their diet throughout the winter and through the spring, and they're doing silage analysis every month. But the soil is an incredibly diverse biological system. We're only testing that once every 5 years. So if we can get the level of attention onto soils that cows get, my nutritionist friends will probably be poking me now. But, you know, we'd like. We'd like more focus on the soils and find out how we can really get that working well, because there's so much potential in those soils out there, and particularly in grassland soils with so much biology, like you said, mentioned about carbon. They've got the highest carbon stocks in the country. They're in my view, they're the heroes. You know, I am a grassland agronomist, and we're storing billions of tons of carbon under that soil with all those root systems. We could be really motoring here with our grassland soils. So we just need to keep that focus on getting that soil biology working as well as the rumen does with our nutritionists.
And for carbon sequestration, nitrogen is also important, because you need a balanced carbon to nitrogen ratio to Absolutely. Be able to maximize your carbon sequestration in the soil.
My final comment would be that we must always remember food security, and Britain is a net importer of food, so we shouldn't be changing our agricultural systems for what we think might be human dietary reasons. We need to be actually thinking, how can we make best use of what we've got to produce balanced and highly nutritious food for the human population?
I just think, you know, as we're coming into the winter now and dairy cows are going to be on their winter diets, so focusing on that efficiency, or what's the word, Katerina, you said, it's not efficiency, optimising the nitrogen use. It's the perfect time for planning for the spring for your cropping. So get those soil samples done, look at areas where you can improve on your soils, and plan your nutrient use for your crops for next year. It is about nitrogen, essential, but it's about balancing it.
Where manures are stored inside, because animals are inside, that we look at minimising the losses of nitrogen to the air as nitrous oxide or ammonia through putting some additives in, which your
slurry bugs
exactly
type
can do that. So you can actually
any type of silage inoculant. I use the right
and
word.
And if you are adding
slurry inoculant,
if you're preventing nitrogen loss from those manures, there'll be more nitrogen in those manures when you put them on the land.
It's like I paid him to say all this stuff.
Right up your street, Lisa, this is.
Yeah absolutely. Better cut me off, Seth.
And if you do want to go back and hear, we've had previous podcasts talking about slurry additive and also about what you can do on farm to make your soils less compacted to avoid less runoff. So go back and listen to the back catalogue, the Mole Valley Farmers podcast.
Thanks ever so much for listening today. We'll be back soon with another agricultural update from Mole Valley Farmers. If you'd like to find out more about what we've been talking about today, then please visit molevalleyfeedsolutions.com. That's molevalleyfeedsolutions.com. And I'll speak to you soon.